We have come to the third week of the Jairus series. For this evening, we'll study the story of Ruth. Ruth from the Old Testament. The story of Ruth took place when the Israelites had just entered Canaan, and at the same time with the book of Judges as well, which is at the beginning of Old Testament. And this is how the book of Judges ends. Just a reminder. End of Judges is that in those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his or her own eyes. This is a challenging time. And this is how our Jairus story this evening starts. And in the beginning of the book of Ruth, it says, in the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. It was not an ideal time to be an Israelite, I'm sure. Besides all the political uncertainty, there was a famine. And then a man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the country of Moab. Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife, Naomi. And the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. So this is like a small family, not too big. And in light of all the challenging situation happened, famine and all the political uncertainty, the family decided to move kind of southeast from Bethlehem to Moab. They went into the country of Moab and remained there. But Elimelech died, and Naomi was left with her two sons. Naomi would never imagine that her better half would leave so soon when the two sons were still young. We don't know how old, but they're probably in their teenagers. Some years later, the two sons got married. Both sons, in verse 4 said, took Moabite wives. The name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other, Ruth. And while Naomi was expecting to become a grandma, you know, at the time, you know, people got married quite early and then next generation should be coming, right? But while she expect to become a grandma, the story of Ruth took a sudden turn. Verse 5, both Mahlon and Chilion die. Oops. First it was the husband and now the two sons. You can imagine how desperate was Naomi. Her husband died, and now the two sons were gone. Then Naomi arose with her daughters-in-law to return from Moab, for she had heard that in the fields of Moab that the Lord has visited his people and given them food. I say, oh, wow, that is good, which is good news. So he set out from the place where she was with her two daughters-in-law, and they went. And they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. They were from Judah, right, from Bethlehem. So they are going back. And for Naomi, Moab was a place full of too many sad memories. You can imagine, right? And now she's ready to move on and back to Judah. Verse 8 is that. But Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, go, return each of you to your mother's house, and may the Lord deal kindly with you too, as you have dealt with the dead and me. And then the Lord grant that you may find rest, and each of you in the house of her husband. What does it mean that at that time, the two daughters-in-law were still young comparatively, and probably in their 20s, so if they go back to their home at Moab, they would have a much higher chance of finding another husband and then continue their life. Then Naomi kissed them, and they lifted up their voice and wept. And they said to her, no, we'll return with you to your people, to Judah. To our surprise, these two daughters-in-law loved Naomi so much that they did not want to leave Naomi. But Naomi said, turn back, my daughter. Why will you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that may become your husband? Probably impossible, right? So turn back, my daughters. Go your way. For I am too old to have a husband. No, my daughters, for it is exceedingly bitter to me for your sake, that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. You can imagine, you know, Naomi have all kind of, you know, sad memory, you know, negative feelings within her. So at that moment, Naomi understood that if the two daughters-in-law stay with her, they would have no future at all, especially at that time, you know, female is not able to do a lot of things professionally. So even finding food could be a challenge. Verse 14, and then they lift up their voice and wept together. That was a sad story so far, right? So Orpah kissed Naomi, but Ruth clung to her. Well, you know this book is called the Book of Ruth, so you know who is the main character, right? So finally, Orpah, this supporting actress, left. But Ruth stayed with Naomi. Verse 15, and Naomi said, see, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Well, because they are from a different religion, right? So return, go back after your sister-in-law. But this is interesting. Ruth, we don't know why she gets such a strong conviction, but Ruth said, do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you. For where you go, I will go. And where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God shall be my God as well. Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. And may the Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death pass me from you. This is one of the strong words that you can get from the Bible. On the road from Moab to Judah, this is what Ruth shared from the very bottom of her heart. A strong conviction, a firm commitment. And when Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more. No more additional comment. So the two of them went on until they came to Bethlehem. I'm sure we all know Bethlehem, the Christmas story, right? But this is in the Old Testament, so the Christmas story haven't started yet, but you will eventually see a connection. So for Naomi, Bethlehem means homecoming, right? She is where she is from. But for Ruth, this is a new place. She know no one there. Verse 18, and when they came to Bethlehem, the whole town was stirred because of them. And the woman said, is this Naomi? When the woman in Bethlehem saw Naomi, they would have many questions. You can imagine. Is this Naomi? What's behind that? Isn't she the one who married Elimelech? Isn't she the mother of Mahlon and Chilion? So where's the husband? And how come she's back by herself? And they don't even know that Ruth is following her, right? So Naomi said to them, Do not call me Naomi, call me Mara. For the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. After all the suffering, Naomi hated her name so much. You know why? She said, because her name means sweetness. So for God's sake, Naomi said, please stop calling me Naomi. I hate this name so much. Stop calling me. And then she continued, I went away full, and the Lord has brought me back empty. This word, empty. Why call me Naomi when the Lord has testified against me and the Almighty has brought calamity upon me? So and now, all she can do is to put all the blame to God. It is God who brought me back empty. It is God who brought all the calamity upon me. So at the end of chapter 1, Naomi returned with Ruth, and they came to Jerusalem. At the beginning, this is the season, at the beginning of barley harvest. As we come to chapter 2, the author introduced another main character. Well, we only have four chapters here, right? So this is like a short story here. So chapter two, someone else came. Now Naomi had a relative of her husband, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. So remember this name. Boaz is another main character in this story. And interestingly, Boaz was not only rich, but he was also a close relative of Naomi's husband, Elimelech. So when Naomi and Ruth arrived at Bethlehem, it was the beginning, they said, of the barley harvest, right? Then, interestingly, Ruth knew all those agriculture. So she had an idea. Let me, Ruth said, go to the field and glean among the ears of grain, after him in whose sight I shall find favor. You know why? Because according to Jewish law, the Jewish farmers were not allowed to harvest all the grains. They need to leave the margins of the field for the poor and underprivileged. I don't think we practice this anymore, right, in our modern farming. But at that time, this is the way Jewish practiced as a merciful act. So based on this tradition, Ruth hopes that she was able to pick up some leftover, some harvest as food for Naomi and herself. And then chapter 2, verse 2 said, so Naomi said to Ruth, go, my daughter. So she set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the part of the field belongs to Boaz. Interesting. There's a lot of fields in Bethlehem, I'm sure. Just happened, Ruth came to the right place. Interestingly, out of all the big and small fields, Ruth just happened to be at the field of Boaz. And while Ruth was busy gleaning in the field, Boaz arrived and noticed a stranger in the field. Then Boaz asked, hey, whose young woman is it? At that time, you know, they don't see a lot of strangers every day, right? So Boaz spots some strangers in the field. And the servant answered, she is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. So after identifying with who Ruth was, Boaz extended a warm welcome. Verse 8. Now listen, my daughter. Do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young woman. For Ruth, it was the good news. Right? She does not need to search for other fields every day, trying to seek for food. She can always come to this field, Boaz's field, to look for food. And when Ruth heard about this kind offer, in verse 10 it says, she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to Boaz, why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me since I am a foreigner. You know, they can tell, you know, she's a foreigner. She doesn't belong to Bethlehem. She is from Moab, which is a totally different race, a different culture. But Boaz answered Ruth, tell her the truth. All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me. We don't know how he got all the news about Ruth at that time, right? And then Boaz said, and how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you do not know before. So it seems like Boaz has done his homework. Before Boaz met Ruth, he has already heard about her story. And he had high respect about Ruth's loyalty and faithfulness. Verse 11, the Lord repays you for what you have done, Boaz said. And the full reward be given you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. So Ruth received favor at this harvest field, almost on the first day, right? So thank God she doesn't need to look around. Verse 17, so Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. And then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. So how much is an one ephah? I did some research. It's about 22 liters, which is about 5.5 jug of milk, which is quite a lot. Can you imagine? 5.5 jug of milk. Okay. That's good news, right? Because at the time, Ruth doesn't need a job or doesn't need anything. She just needs food. And this is what she got. So when Ruth brought back the harvest, Naomi was surprised. What? First day only, right? You know, Naomi expect, you know, she will come back empty probably. And after finding out that the field belongs to Boaz, Naomi was even more amazed. May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead, Naomi said. And Naomi also said to Ruth, this man is a close relative of yours. Do you know that? One of our redeemers. Okay, another interesting word here. What did Naomi means that Boaz is a redeemer. According to Jewish law, when Naomi had financial difficulty, there's one thing she could do. And guess what? Naomi could sell the land which belongs to her husband in Bethlehem. Actually, they own a piece of land originally in Bethlehem. Even they move, the land still belongs to them. And she can sell it. And if a relative of Elimelech, which is Naomi's husband, is willing to buy this land and at the same time take Ruth as his wife, and also if, many conditions here, and also if a child is born out of this new marriage, okay, so buy the land, take Ruth as a wife, and also if a child is born, then this newborn would have the right to inherit this land on behalf of Ruth's husband. You get the math, right? This is what behind being a redeemer. And what it seems to be, this is a good plan, right? But as you can tell, it's not an easy plan to carry out. Wow, you have to find the right person, and the person is willing to take Ruth as the wife, and then they have a kid, and then, you know, the land can keep, right? So we have kind of reached the halfway of the story. And you might wonder, would the Redeemer be found? Let's go to chapter 3. Chapter 3, verse 1. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to Ruth, my daughter, should I not seek rest for you, that it may be well with you? Is not Boaz our relative with whose young woman you were? Exactly. What is Naomi trying to say? Actually, Naomi wanted to make a relative risky move. Guess what? Naomi is asking Ruth to make a marriage proposal to Boaz. Can you imagine, you know, this is not 2024. It was like in the Old Testament. But this is the way that they will survive. So Ruth, the daughter, listen, my daughter, here's the plan. This is what Naomi told her. See, Boaz is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Wash therefore and anoint yourself and put on your cloth and go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. Interestingly. But when Boaz lies down, observe the place where he lies. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what to do. Ruth listened and follow exactly what Naomi has told. Verse 8. At midnight, the man Boaz was startled and turned over. And behold, the Bible said, a woman lay at his feet. And he said, who are you? But it's probably quite dark, right? So he couldn't tell. And then Ruth answered, I am Ruth, your servant. Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer. Now we know the meaning of redeemer, right? So at this very moment, Ruth was making a formal requests a marriage proposal to Boaz. Ruth is asking Boaz to become her redeemer. And what was the reaction of Boaz? Verse 11. "And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you ask." That's pretty good. Boaz is a good man. "And now, it is true that I am a redeemer. Yet," this is a yet here, "there is a redeemer nearer than I." So that means there is someone else which is even closer in their genealogy, right? "But anyway, Ruth, remain tonight. And in the morning, if he will redeem you, good. Let that the other redeemer do it. But if he is not willing to redeem you, then as the Lord lives, I, Boaz, will redeem you." Okay, that's good. So at least Ruth got some assurance. And when we come to chapter 4, which is the last chapter already, the final chapter, now it is Boaz's turn to take the initiative. Boaz found the Redeemer, which was nearer than him, and explained what happened. Verse 3, "Then Boaz said to the Redeemer, 'Naomi, who has come back from the country of Moab, is selling the parcel of land that belongs to our relative Elimelech. If you will redeem it, redeem it. But if you will not, tell me, that I may know, for there is no one besides you to redeem it, and I come after you.'" At the start, the other relative was quite positive about this offer. But when he noticed that the deal includes marrying Ruth and becoming her redeemer, then that relative declined the offer. So once the original offer was declined, Boaz then made his move. Verse 9, "Then Boaz said to the elders and all the people there in the city gate, 'You all are the witnesses this day that I have brought from the hand of Naomi all that belongs to Elimelech. Also Ruth the Moabite, the widow of Mahlon, I have brought to be my wife,' Boaz said, 'to perpetuate the name of the dead in his inheritance.'" Wow, interestingly, right? All the turns, all the things, you know, this is not just a drama. It was a true story, right? Although the story of Ruth started in a very bitter note. You still remember, right? "Don't call me Naomi, call me Myra." You know, that is bitter. We are glad at this point, there is a happy ending. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. And he went into her, and the Lord gave her conception, and Ruth bore a son. Ruth's story concludes with a reversal. A reversal from loss to gain. A reversal from loss to gain. At the beginning of the story, Ruth and Naomi has lost almost everything, as we said, right? And at the end of the story, we witness a pleasant ending. When Naomi took the newborn baby and laid him on her lap. When her husband and her sons die, I'm sure Naomi would never thought of having a grandchild anymore. You know, that's it. You know, life is a dead end. However, the wonder of this story does not just stop in this reversal. If we kind of extrapolate the timeline and see a bigger picture, we would actually find another even more amazing reversal. As we all know, the story of Ruth took place at the time of Judges, when everyone did what was right in his own eye, and there was no king, right? We mentioned in the beginning. At the very end of Ruth's story, there was a second reversal. In verse 17, it said, "And the woman of the neighborhood gave this new baby a name, saying, 'A son has been born to Naomi. They name him Obed. And guess who is this guy? He was the father of Jesse. And Jesse was the father of David. Well, by the time this book was written and the Jewish people read it, they all know David, right? David, oh yeah, we know David. King David, right? Oh, what? You mean Ruth was a great-great-great-grandmother of King David? Surprise, surprise. No one would imagine Ruth from Moab would become the great-grandmother of the most significant king in Israel. David's great-grandmother was Ruth. See the connection here. So, another reversal. At a chaotic time, when there was no king, no one would imagine that God will work through a widow from Moab. No one would imagine the family line of the Davidic dynasty would be preserved through a widow from Moab, a foreigner. And then a new king would come. But guess what? The amazing wonder of this story does not stop as this reversal. There's just another one. Many, many generations after David, the family line of David would reach another king, the King of Kings, the incarnate Jesus, from King of Israel to the King of Kings. This third reversal in the book of Ruth has reversed the curse to all the people since Genesis, that everyone is bound by sin and controlled by the evil one. And this third and greatest reversal, God's salvation came on earth and gave us the chance to become God's children. This is the good news. This is the good news we are more familiar, right? But you can trace back now, oh wow, Ruth, this story is actually connected with our known Bethlehem story about Jesus. But besides this topic of reversal, actually, this book of Ruth is an excellent example to illustrate a Christian doctrine of the providence of God. While God's name actually was often mentioned by all the characters, by Ruth or by Naomi or by Boaz, if you go back to the book and take a look, God was seldom mentioned by the writer of this book. And on the contrary, the writer had his own style of storytelling. Let me just highlight a few here. In chapter 2, when Ruth set out to glean in the field, they said she happened to come to the field belongs to Boaz, as we just read before, right? And at the same moment, Boaz just happened to come to the field from Bethlehem. And it also turned out that Boaz was not just another rich man, right? But he was a relative of Naomi and the husband. And eventually, this redeemer thing works out quite well. So, you can tell, among the many coincidences, Boaz and Ruth were brought together. They didn't know each other. They didn't plan to know each other at all. But it seems like all the things happened and then eventually they met. And this is exactly how the author of Ruth used this storyline to illustrate one aspect of God, the providence of God. The author pointed out that behind all the unexpected, behind all the disappointment, behind all the tragic moments in life, there's one unchanging factor, which is the providence of God, and which is actually why we are doing this series, Jireh, God Will Provide, the providence of God. And in the era of Judges, when the world has turned chaotic, God did not abandon the world. In those challenging times, God still rules over all things. He still sustains and provides for all things. And in such an age of chaos and darkness, God did not abandon that those two insignificant widows. And through Naomi, through Ruth, and through Boaz, God reversed the destiny of the whole Israel nation. Can you see the connections there? And through the widow from the land of Moab, the deadly curse upon human is reversed. And Jesus is also part of this whole bigger story. And this is exactly the providence of God. Nothing, absolutely nothing, can overthrow God's plan. Even though life seems to be random, life seems to be chaotic, God is not silent and He is still working. As I, myself, look back the year 2024, I'm thankful, actually, tell you a little story here. This is my 10th year serving at Koinonia. And this is also my 10th year moving from Toronto to Vancouver. If you've been here for long, I've told you different stories about moving, right? But 10 years ago, before 2014, I would never imagine that I'll be moving to Vancouver. I would never imagine I'll be pastoring in a church. And I'm 100% sure that behind all the unplanned, seemingly unplanned and random steps, there's one simple truth, which is the word Jireh. God provide. The Lord provide. And when we talk about the providence of God, perhaps you might wonder, if God always provide, does it mean that we don't need to do anything? We don't need to plan anything? We don't need to do anything but just sit back and do nothing? Of course not. And within this doctrine of divine providence, actually, there's an important element called concurrence, which reminds us that the divine activity runs parallel to the activity of people and things. So God is doing things, but also human is also doing many things. And just use Ruth as an illustration. Besides all the divine activity by the Almighty God, there are quite a lot of human activity in the story, right? After Ruth went through all the family tragedies, it was her own decision of following Naomi. And when they arrived Bethlehem, it was Ruth's own decision to go and pick up the barley. No one helped her. And as for Boaz, it was out of his own generosity that a helping hand was extended to Ruth. And for Naomi, it was her own idea. I don't know why she had this crazy idea, right? To encourage Ruth to take an active and a risky step to proposing the marriage to Boaz. Dear church, under the umbrella of divine providence, God did not just invent a bunch of robots. We, human, do have a role in partnering with God. This is what we have been learning about the providence of God and the concurrence. Let me conclude Ruth's story with a verse, a familiar verse from the book of Romans. Romans chapter 8, 28. I'm using the NASB version. And we know that God causes all things to work together for good. To those who love God, to those who are called according to His purpose. And we know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to His purpose. God has created a world in which the Creator and the created can work together to build this world. This is our belief. The generosity of Boaz has played an important part in the salvation project of God. The loyalty of Ruth has also played a part in changing, in altering the destiny of the whole Israel nation. So our God, the Creator, and the Lord of universe is actually inviting us to become a partner with Him. Just like what we just read in today's story, your generosity could make a difference in someone's destiny in 2024. Your loyalty can also change someone's course at the end of this year, 2024. Whenever you have demonstrated maybe generosity, maybe your loyalty or faithfulness, God will work through your life and my life and leave a mark in the life of someone else. God is powerful. God is love. And God is good all the time. God used Ruth's faithfulness to reshape the family history of King David. God can also use your faithfulness to make a difference in someone's life story. So let's make ourselves available as God's instrument of blessing. Let's spend a moment of silence and reflection, and then we'll finish with a prayer. So let's spend a minute of silence and reflection together, shall we? Church, let's stand and pray together, shall we? Let's stand. Dear God, we thank you. We thank you for the little story from the Old Testament called Ruth. We thank you for teaching us this evening about generosity, about faithfulness. So Lord, help us. Give us this opportunity. So that we can make ourselves available as your instrument of blessing, as your instrument of giving, as your instrument of loving someone, especially as the world is still getting chaotic. So Lord, help us. Help us to have the courage, help us to have the space to make ourselves available as your instrument of peace. In Jesus' name we pray.